for all my love of Anglican liturgy, it's just hard sometimes. It just misses the mark, frankly, in terms of a spiritual expression that feels like it's speaking to the Black experience. And so I found myself really frustrated in some spiritual spaces, just in the Book of Common Prayer, which was written by a white man. Found myself really frustrated, angry, and I think anger coupled with a very deep sense of longing, or maybe that sense of longing was what was underneath my anger, is how Black liturgies came to be.
Hi everyone, this is Dana Black.
And this is Chelsea Simon.
Welcome to the Collective Table.
Hi everyone, Chelsea here. Oh my gosh, do we have a treat for you. Today on the podcast, Dana and I are joined by Cole Arthur Riley. She is the author and creator of the wildly popular social media account, Black Liturgies. Birthed out of the lack of adequate prayers and liturgy following the murder of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery, Black Liturgies became a space where Black words live in dignity, lament, rage, and hope to the glory of God. Cole is a writer, liturgist, and speaker, seeking a deeply contemplative life marked by embodiment and emotion. Her beautiful, thoughtful, and sacred prayers have touched the hearts of people around the world. Her vulnerability and honesty are truly gifts to us all. So open your hearts and minds as we dig in with Cole Arthur Riley.
For me, and I think for our audience, it would be great just to hear a little bit about how you grew up, what was your faith tradition, maybe 5 or 10 minutes on your background and how that has informed where you are.
Born and for the most part raised in Pittsburgh, raised by my father and later in life, my stepmother. My father's Black, he's mixed, Black and white, and my stepmom is white. Her father was Jewish. Although she's not practicing. So we were raised in a interracial home. And yeah, I attended the University of Pittsburgh. I studied English writing and English lit. And now I live in upstate New York.
Was Christianity a part of your upbringing? And if not, was there another faith tradition? And how did you get to be a Christian if it wasn't a part of your life?
Yeah, Christianity wasn't really a part of my upbringing. We didn't grow up going to church or anything like that. There was this strange year of my life where my household did attend this all-white Baptist church because my Aunt Kathy's husband had died. So we started to go with her just to keep her company. And I just thought it was the weirdest thing, the weirdest season of life. And it wasn't really until the end of high school, beginning of college, that I began to take religion, the idea of religion and God seriously, and Christianity in particular seriously. So I basically sum up my journey into the Christian tradition as a lot of reading. So I took out a lot of books from the library. It was back when people still did that. So I took out a lot of books on major world religions from the library, and my 17 to 18 year old brain tried my best to digest them with the level of dignity they deserve. And after about 3 months, I was very interested in Christianity. So when I went to college, that was the first time I experienced any kind of formal religious education or anything like that. I had a friend who had recently become Christian in a very different way through like a mega conference or something. And he was like, I think if we're Christian, we are supposed to go to church or something. And so we did no research. We just went to this big, obvious church in the middle of campus with Big Red Doors and didn't do much searching after that initially. So yeah, that church was where I first began, you know, doing things like Sunday school and book studies and Bible studies and things like that.
I'm so curious, what books did you check out of the library that held your interest as a 17, 18 year old and kind of wanted, like, you kept going? Like, what books were they?
People ask this. So people ask this all the time. I have no idea. I have no idea. My sister recently dropped off this like bin of books, and I'm like, I wonder if some of the books, if I like didn't return them and I could maybe find a diary that would like explain what books I was reading. But it was a very generic, very immature research. I literally just went and like got out pretty generic books on the 12 major world religions. So I don't think it was anything all that spectacular or renowned. I definitely remember reading some very strange, like anti-evolutionist things and just thinking all Christians thought that. It was just interesting exploring on your own because you don't have the, you know, companions to actually understand. I was operating without any real help or understanding. So yeah, those books that I took out, I probably would not recommend them to another soul.
Yeah, you can go down some rabbit holes with that some conservative Christian anti, you know, I mean, especially when you're by yourself. That's why Dana and I say all the time, we're so glad we have each other to do this kind of digging with. But
mm-hmm. So, and I just want to go back. So were you, when you were doing this, were you looking at all of the different kind of faith traditions and trying to say, okay, well, what's speaking to me? Or was it, did you just focus on Christianity? But I thought I heard you say you were looking at all of them.
Yeah, I was looking at the top 12. I don't know where I got that, maybe from a book. And it was like, here are the top 12 major world religions. But I was looking at around 12, but very superficially. And pretty much within a month, if I'm remembering correctly, I was really interested in the Abrahamic tradition, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, and just interested in kind of how those stories intersected. A lot of overlap there, of course.
So since then, how is your faith tradition? What does it look like today, and how has it evolved since that point in time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So after college, towards the end of college, I became interested in liturgical Christian background. So I studied writing in English, like I said, and have always been kind of moved in a particular way by written words. And so the first Episcopal service I went to, I was like, this is really beautiful, beautiful writing. So I am Episcopalian, but I would say not staunchly so. I'm actually looking for a new church at the moment. And if it's Episcopalian, I would love that. But my husband and I have been talking about, you know, what it would look like if we needed to attend elsewhere just to find a congregation that really speaks to what we need. So yeah, where I am now is kind of definitely still those liturgical kind of desires and loves, but I'm also very interested in kind of unorganized, I never really like that language, but unorganized Black spirituality, the kind of, if you would have asked me 2 years ago, I would have said, yeah, it wasn't until college that I really became interested in spirituality. But that's not really the case. I think even though I wasn't raised in an overtly religious home, my household held a lot of spirituality, a lot of kind of subtle spiritualities and spiritual formation that was happening. And at the moment, I'm really interested in that kind of subtle spiritual formation.
There's a lot to unpack right there. And so I'll start, and then I'm sure Chelsea will dive in. For folks that are listening to this podcast, I mean, they will range from individuals that have been hurt by the Christian church, individuals that are, you know, like yourself, like they are spiritual, but they're trying to understand what is Christianity? What does it look like? How do I engage with it? And then there's people that have been actively practicing Christianity for years. But when you say liturgical, what does that look like? Can you tell our audience a little bit about what that means for you?
Yes. Thanks for asking for that clarification. For me, liturgy is basically just a form for a Christian prayer service, a Christian prayer moment, not even necessarily a service. And liturgical traditions tend to have these kind of written artifacts that are passed on, passed down, that have been recited for enough time to be memorable among people across time and space.
Yeah, like so much. I think for our audience too, that is like, I think so often many of us think that God is confined to the walls of the church, right? Like you have to go to church to be in God's presence. And you're mm-hmm. saying, okay, I felt God's presence at home in these subtle ways. I'm wondering if you can just give an example, like how else can people experience God outside of the walls of a church?
Yeah, I think for my household, our spirituality looked a lot like storytelling, which I don't think is uncommon for Black people. It was a lot of, exchanging stories and things that had essentially, we didn't use this language, but like the things that had formed my father and my grandmother, it was very open in that way. And then we were also encouraged to kind of have agency and communicate our own stories and the things that were making us, even as children, even as very young children, we were encouraged to try to figure out who we were and put language and stories to that. And so I think that's a very spiritual thing that's sometimes missing in the church walls, not for everyone, but certainly for some people, certainly in liturgical traditions, I think a habit of storytelling can be missing.
I started a year ago and I'm at Duke Divinity in seminary. And so this summer I'm taking an intro to worship class and we're talking a lot about why do we gather and what's the purpose of gathering and what does that look like? And the words that you're using, are just so appropriate to what I'm engaging with in class right now. And storytelling is a big thing. I mean, if we go back to, you know, the early Christian, you know, church, which is, you know, after, you know, Christ resurrects, Paul writes the letters, the epistles, and you have the early, it was all storytelling. Mm-hmm. It was all oral tradition. These people gathered together on the first day of the week, Sunday, and they told the stories of the prophets and the epistles. Mm-hmm. And so it is interesting that we've kind of moved. And this one book that I'm currently reading really talks about this journey into how we got to a place where there is now written down word and what that impact has been on the worship experience.
Hmm. That's
so
beautiful.
Yeah, it's just what you're saying is completely appropriate. I love it.
And when we're talking about written word, Cole, you write so beautifully. I found Black Liturgies, it was right. Maybe tell us, what is Black Liturgies? How did it come to be? When did you kind of have this idea form in you and then live it out?
Sure. So I began... I can't even believe I'm saying this, but I began almost a year ago or coming up on a year, began curating the space and with the intention that it would be a space for a kind of archive of Black quotes from thinkers and activists, Black poems and Black sentiments from, you know, different creatives that I was encountering, coupled with kind of this historic practice of written prayer. And I focus a lot on things like dignity, lament, rage, justice, liberation, rest even. So these kind of topics that have at least become really important to me in this season of life in terms of thinking about how I'm going to survive, how I'm going to live without approaching despair. And I think each of those topics does that for me in a unique way. I began it at end of June, beginning of July of last year. So it was in the wake of the murders of Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd. And of course, we had Breonna Taylor and Elijah McClain's murders resurface shortly after. And for all my love of Anglican liturgy, it's just hard sometimes. It just misses the mark, frankly, in terms of a spiritual expression that feels like it's speaking to the Black experience. And so I found myself really frustrated in some spiritual spaces, just in the Book of Common Prayer, which was written by a white man. Found myself really frustrated, angry, and I think anger coupled with a very deep sense of longing, or maybe that sense of longing was what was underneath my anger, is how Black liturgies came to be.
Yeah, I'm not Black, but I feel like when I started reading your prayers, you so honestly name lament and rage and this like desire for liberation and justice in this way that I have never read before. But I was like, that's true. Like when I read your stuff, I'm just like, that is just so honest. And it doesn't shy away from the fact, like the whole spectrum of human emotion is like right there.
Have you found certain spiritual practices in your own life that have helped guide you in that process as you write and curate and kind of process through the emotion that's so raw and needs to be expressed?
Yeah, I think if there was one kind of practice that's forming me in this season, it's silence and kind of a wordlessness in my private spiritual life. And I think that for me has been a really healthy balance to so much of my, you know, spiritual words being for, you know, the public eye and being kind of laid bare before so many people. I think to balance that, it's been really good and helpful to like just have these sacred moments where I don't have to say anything. It can just be quiet, and to remind myself that that's just as special. I think I have a really complicated relationship with silence because, of course, it's been wielded against the oppressed, yeah, as a weapon for so long. So I had initially this kind of resistance to the spiritual discipline of silence, even though it completely speaks with who I am as a person. I still felt this resistance. I'm like, I didn't want to give in to a spirituality that told me to be quiet. But I've really come to, just become honest with myself about who I am. I don't think it's for everyone, frankly. Some would say it is. I'm not one of them. I don't think it's for everyone, but I think depending on your selfhood, depending on what's, you know, true of you, it can be really healing. It can absolutely be a space of rest in a world that's just demanding so much, that one is just made of noise and also demands you to speak on so much. To have a spiritual practice that is rooted in quiet, I think can be very liberating, or at least it has been for me.
Oh yeah. Have you found it challenging? Have you had to intentionally find and build in those moments of quiet in your life, given the work that you're doing and putting the work out there?
Thankfully, no. Thankfully, no. I'm very privileged to lead a pretty quiet life in general. I live on an old farm, no animals, thank God. But I live out right outside of Ithaca on enough land that allows for some wandering. And I have a small inner circle, and that inner circle allows for a kind of knownness that lends itself really well to calling each other out. So I don't think I could overwork if I wanted to, honestly, with the friends that I have. Like, they are fierce. If anyone's familiar with the Enneagram, lots of Enneagram 8s in my life, and they are protective. They don't want to be controlled, and they don't want their friends to be controlled. So they just do not tolerate, you know, exhaustion. They do not tolerate bodily neglect. I'm really thankful for that. Without them, I probably would be having more trouble with it, but they've really, you know, repeated back at me what they've seen in me, which is that I do better when I have a lot of silence in my life. I'm a kinder person. My relationships are stronger whenever I balance that out with some amount of quiet. And again, that's just me. But I think it comes down to, like, do you have people who really know and can kind of see those things in you?
Do you ever feel like if something in the world, if something happens, do you ever feel pressure that you have to produce, like, a prayer or a post, or, you know, and what do you do if it's not there, like if it's not coming for you?
Yes, I do feel this pressure. I never would have thought that I would. I'm not a people pleaser. At least I don't think I am, but I don't know. Maybe I'll have to contend with that in a few years. But at this point, I don't think I'm a people pleaser. So I never thought I would feel this, like, overwhelming pressure to, like, speak on a ton of different things. But it comes. I'm trying to think of a recent example even. I think Palestine is a really good example. A severe lack of knowledge on my part to know enough to be able to write something with integrity, I think, on this really Palestinian conflict and oppression that's happening. And so many people were asking for it. And I was like, I don't think it's appropriate to kind of center my voice right now. I just entered the conversation, and me with however many followers is gonna try to take up space in this conversation. So this, like, ethical part of me, this part of me that was thinking about integrity, was like, this, you know, this isn't appropriate. You, like, you wouldn't do this. Like, this isn't who you are in real life, in life, you know? And yet there was this other sense of, like, who am I disappointing? What will people assume? What assumptions are to be made about who I am, about what I believe, what I think is happening? And of course, if you follow me, you would have seen it a lot and are still seeing a lot of stuff in my stories, trying to amplify voices that actually know what the heck they're talking about, and are in it. But it's still this pressure of, like, what will people assume, you know, what will people assume about me? And I hate that. I wish we didn't have to think that way. I mean, I do think social media can be really integral in justice work, of course. I don't want to be kind of naive about that, but there are times when I really worry about, I don't know, what it's doing to justice work. What it's, you know, yeah, if it's not seen, if the work, as people say, if the work's not seen, then did you do it? You know, if it's not seen by your social media feed, then did you do it? And I have a lot of fears about where that's heading.
I think what I'm hearing from you, and certainly it's relevant in my life, and I actually have 3 kids ranging from the age of, you know, 13 to 22. And you know, I hear the idea of noise, which is constant in our technological world. And a big piece of that is social media. And I also hear, you know, not knowing the whole story and really trying to understand. And it's like, you're getting hit everywhere. And it's like, how do you find ways to kind of just push it out? And I know for me, trying to raise kids to to not be constantly affected by that noise and know that there are different stories and to really have all of that and to listen to all of the voices. And it's not necessarily your voice, child. It's complicated. It's really overwhelming. So I appreciate the quietness. I love that message. That is so appropriate.
But I do hear you too. Like, there's this tension of, yes, it can be all of, like, social media can be all of those things. And yet, like, you're giving voice, you and your work is giving voice to something that isn't out there, that you're filling a void that, you know, is really help. I mean, it helps me, and it helps me put language to feelings and thoughts and you're right. Like, I mean, I think I was just looking, like, you have over 100,000. I mean, like, you have a lot of followers, and I see people reposting it all of the time just because I think it resonates so much with people. And so the good work that that's doing also, it's like this balance of, like, those two things.
With your work, one of the things I realized is, I mean, it's becoming an actual spiritual practice. So, I mean, we have all different types of spiritual practice, whether it's things like, you know, Lectio Divina, where you're reading scripture multiple times and kind of focusing it. But when I look at your liturgies, I'm like, right here in this moment is a spiritual practice for me to engage in, to quiet myself, to come into a space, read the content. I love the inhale, the exhale. It takes me back to meditation and centering. So I think it is its own spiritual practice for sure.
Mm-hmm. I hope it is. I don't think I knew that I hoped that until you named it as a practice, but I do hope for that. I hope for it to be a kind of pause and something that people don't feel like is just happening to them, you know, like those, you encounter a lot of that, I think, online, and it's just, you have no agency. It's just this thing that's happening to you as opposed to something you can actually participate in. So I like that language of practice.
What is some of the, have you heard like feedback, but people reach out to you and kind of like, what is some of the feedback you've heard since starting?
Yes, people are so kind. I didn't think people were so kind over social media, honestly. I'm like, I was such an antagonist to social media before Black liturgies. And then I'm like, people are really not all that bad. There are, you know, there's just a lot of good and gratitude and encouragement in the world. And I've been benefiting from so much of it. So people reach out daily and just sharing their stories. I am always touched that people trust me to kind of hold pieces of their stories, and also just keep it short sometimes. I get a lot of DMs actually from people maybe that feel similar to your audience, who maybe aren't deeply rooted in a church anymore, or kind of trying to figure out their spirituality, recovering from a kind of Christian spirituality where they didn't always feel welcome. And I receive a lot of messages from people like that, who are like, I don't know what I think about God anymore, but I'm happy to have this space. And I think that's been both most surprising and also most touching. It's like, I never had the imagination for written prayer, which can, not always, but it can feel a bit stale and like traditionalist, in a bad way. Young people, as we know, Dana, you mentioned having children, young people are very skeptical of tradition. And it's a very credible suspicion. And so I just didn't have a like huge imagination for like people who have been harmed by church tradition, have experienced tradition to be violent, to actually find some kind of refuge in written word. Absolutely did not dream of that for a second. So very grateful that some of that is happening.
That's wonderful. We love hearing that you're getting positive feedback from social media, because we do think, oh no, what is social media going to offer us? You never know.
Great. Yeah. And my fierce and protective friends, they're like in my comments, like reporting all the negative stuff before I even see it. And so I probably have a very skewed view even, but I'm like, everyone's so nice.
Shout out to your fierce and protective friends.
Wow. I was going to say, you have good friends. That's good. I think we've done a lot of like this theme of like the traditional church has deeply formed us, and we have absolutely taken gifts from it. And yet I think we believe that there is something else or something more. If you could, what is like your, what would be your dream for the church as like we move into the future?
I dream for rest. I do. I almost want to say something else, something more interesting, you know, but if I'm most honest, like that's my deepest desire for the church. I think we have a lot of exhausted people fighting for a sense of belonging in these institutions, in these Christian spaces, and what they need the most in my experience tends not to be this, kind of demand for a certain doctrine or a certain set of beliefs or X, Y, and Z, but for a kind of deep and embodied care that tells people to attune to their bodies. And I think when people are deeply rested and not terrified of their own needs and of themselves, you actually do see how that can affect another person's liberation. And I think you do see how that affects our justice practices if it's born out of a sense of again, exhaustion, a lack of attunement, versus if it's born out of a sense of like deep attunement to what Howard Thurman calls the sound of the genuine in yourself, which I think is just as much a spiritual, you know, mental sound as it is, you know, this embodied sound. I think it's just about full attunement to who you are, what you really want, what you're really afraid of, what you're really operating out of. And I think rest affords us that. A little bit of stillness affords us that opportunity to attune with ourselves. Does that make sense?
That was beautiful. I felt myself like deep breathing. Like when you were, I was like, yeah, that's like, I think that's really true. And when we're, it's from that place that we're able to participate in the world in a new way. I think that's beautiful. Thanks for sharing that.
And this kind of goes along the same lines. You said that right now, you know, you don't have a specific home church that you're connected to. Do you feel it's because there are things like that that are just missing? It's hard to experience that in a church with the four walls, the traditional experience.
For me, I was attending a very healthy and healing church. So in my particular case, I'm just looking to be formed by more people of color in this season. And so that's kind of why I'm transitioning. But I think you're right that for that many people resonate with this kind of hunger for just a little bit more, a little time to hear a story about themselves that's more than you're a sinner, you're bad, that actually says you're dignified, you are made beautiful, you're worthy of protection. I think a lot of people are really hungry for a more nuanced story around their own selfhood and around their own, yeah, liberation.
You know, so I don't know if maybe we can talk about this is, so it sounds as if what I'm hearing from you is you were engaged with a community, but it just did not have diversity. You weren't seeing people of color in that faith community. What does that look like as we try to go out and try to go out and find a community that is more diverse, that has people of color, that is inclusive of the LGBTQIA community? Does that exist where you live? Like, are you finding challenges that it's hard? Do you have to create that for yourself?
Listen, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard. You've hit it. Does it exist where you are? Bless Ithaca. We love it, but it is hard. There's about, you know, one of every kind of church in terms of denomination, but in terms of like the people, you just don't have as much choice. And, you know, I'm very much of the person who used to tell students, like, you know, it's not about like grocery shopping for this perfect idealized church experience. And here I am, like, really feeling the tension of, I want to belong to a church that, for example, receives the Eucharist on a weekly basis. That's something that's important to me and my, or communion, as some people call it. So that's important to me and my Christian practice. I think it's a really beautiful embodied act that I need. And it's really like, so that limits, that takes us down to three churches in Ithaca that receive the Eucharist or communion weekly. I want a church that's a queer affirming, and then it takes it down a little bit more. I want a church that have Black people in leadership. And then it's like, well, here we are. And so I think for me and my husband, we're trying to figure out, okay, it might not look the same in all seasons. I don't feel this compulsion to like make some life commitment to any one church, but in this season, what do we think we really need to be formed by? And kind of, it's going to require us to make some accommodations. Unfortunately, it looks like the accommodation of the Eucharist is probably going to be what is going to happen. And that's sad, but I'll live with that because I think it's really important for me in this season to be formed by a Black pastor. I have this account called Black Liturgies. I really need a Black voice kind of holding me accountable. There are things that, you know, a white pastor just cannot say to me. They won't, first of all, but they can't. Like, something about their social position kind of doesn't allow for the kinds of exchanges I need, the kind of check I need when it comes to having this like public voice as a Black person. So anyways, I say all that to say is it's hard, especially if you live in more isolated places. It can be hard, but don't give up. And I think you can create those spaces if you have the energy, if you have a group of people that you trust. It's not impossible. I mean, you guys created the Collective Table, which isn't exactly what we're talking about, but you know, you're creating this kind of sense of community, I'm sure, for people who are like, I'm not really jiving with the spiritual spaces offered in physical proximity to me. Can I hop on this podcast, you know, for an hour and listen and try and see myself, you know, mirrored in some way, at least for a little bit, see myself cared for. So it's possible.
That's what I was even going to say about your work. You're creating space for people that just might not have access based on their location, that now they're able to like just plug in for a minute and be like reminded of who they are, their dignity and worth, and just have that care for just even like a minute where mm-hmm. they might not have access to it any other way. I think that for queer people all the time too, you know, yes. It's just so limited.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, the extrovert in me is like desperately trying to contain myself right now because I want to just yell, like, what you are saying is exactly what, I mean, I love it. Like, that's what we are missing so much. And to the point where, I mean, even here we are in Southern California, I'm not kidding you, here we are in Southern California, and Chelsea and I have been co-creating the Collective Table with our launch team because we're struggling to find exactly what you're just articulating. Mm-hmm. Like, we're in it with you. And it's just, I'm excited. I'm so enthusiastic when I talk to people like yourself, like the other individuals we're interviewing. We're all throughout the United States, which is beautiful. Boy, I wish we could all be together because it would just be magical. As you can tell, I get very excited because everything you're saying just, it's in my bones. Like, I'm feeling it. So thank you. Thank you for putting those words to it. Mm. Anyway, that's as you can tell, that's the extrovert.
I could tell Dana was getting excited. She was like moving in her chair. I'm an introvert, like you call. And so Dana and I are good partners because we each bring those gifts.
Yes. I'm like ready to yell. Like,
we need people like you, Dana.
Yep. boring world.
Oh, anyway. Okay.
So Cole, what is next for you? What, as you look to like the next couple months, what is coming down the pipe for you?
So I'm going to be finishing up the final kind of round of edits on my manuscript, which is so exciting. There's a release date for my book finally. I'm so excited. February 22nd, 2022. So I'm probably going to just be mustering up the courage to like shamelessly self-promote my book for very long time. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the season of life. I think it'll be really, really significant for me, really good to push myself to advocate for my own words. Because I think throughout Black liturgy, so many people have been advocating for my words. Well, this is a book of words that no one else has read apart from my editors. And so it's like, I'm going to really have to stand behind myself. And I think that will be really empowering and growing for me. So looking forward to that.
Can you tell us about the book at all? Or
yes, I can. It's called This Here Flesh, Spirituality, Liberation, and the Stories That Make Us. So it's a lot of storytelling. I mentioned my family's kind of culture of storytelling. I am traveling through a lot of stories from my father and my grandma, as well as myself, but mostly them, honestly. And I couple it with Christian contemplation on things like dignity and lament and fear and rage and many of the things that kind of were, yeah, the things that Black liturgies was grounded on, is grounded on. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that coming out. I'm looking forward to people. I know I don't share a lot. I don't always share a lot about me on the Black liturgies kind of feed. And so I'm both terrified and excited to kind of have the people who have supported Black liturgies encounter this part of me and kind of see me in a different way, see me within my own story.
So 2, 2, 2, 2, 2.
Yeah, a lot of twos. It's like 1, 0 what? And a lot of twos. So it's easy to remember. Yeah.
Yay! I'm going to put it on my calendar. We're so excited to get into that. You're right. You know, even when I was started following Black liturgies, and then when I went to go see, oh, I wonder if they'd be interested, when your picture popped up, I was just so surprised that it was a young female, because the words are just so deep. Like, you must have such like an old soul, because the words are, but I was just like, oh, how awesome. Like a young female, like just, you know, really doing it. So yeah, you know, all that to say is like, I'm excited to learn more about you through the book and have learned a lot about you through this podcast. So grateful.
Yeah, we'll be promoting it.
Thank you. We'll join you. If you want to stay connected with me, you could go to blackliturgist.com, and there's a little pop-up bar to sign up for a newsletter, some breath prayers sent straight to your inbox, and a way to kind of engage so that you don't need to access social media in order to be in relationship and be included in the community. So feel free to do that.
Oh, I love that.
We'll make sure to put a link whenever this episode goes out so people can engage.
Thank you.
Yeah. One of the things that we are trying to encourage through our website is just different spiritual practices that people can use to kind of just center themselves, connect with the divine, and just quiet their minds and reflect so that they can go out and do the work. They can go out and do the work.
Well, Cole, thank you so much. We were so, so looking forward to this conversation, just being fans of yours for so long. Thank you for your honesty and vulnerability and your beautiful writing. It's such a gift to us and to all of the followers. And I know that it's just going to continue to bless people as they're trying to put words and language to really big feelings and a lot happening in the world. And so it's such a gift. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and best of luck with the collective table.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Just like everyone we are interviewing throughout this series reflects the sacred and holy image of God, so do you. Together, we are what God looks like.
The Collective Table is supported by San Diego United Methodist Church in Encinitas, California.
A big thank you to the team at Castos, especially our producer Stuart Barefoot and our content editor Claire Watson.
The original music heard in this episode was created and performed by Mystic Mercy.
Make sure to subscribe to the podcast, YouTube channel, and our newsletter.
If you'd like to financially support the work of The Collective Table, please visit thecollectivetable.org. There you can also find out more about who we are and view past episodes.